thank you for downloading or streaming this episode of Band Biographies. You can find more episodes at bandbiographies.com. That's B-A-N-N-E-D biographies.com. If you enjoy it, why not leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or whatever service you use to listen to your podcasts? Apparently, it helps get the show up the charts so more people can see it, to download it, and then to leave further 5-star reviews. Another way you can help is by telling as many friends as possible to give it a download. Please do reach out on Twitter at BandBiogs, on Instagram at BandBiographies, search on Facebook for BandBiographies, or by emailing bandbiographies@gmail.com. But most of all, enjoy. Hello, and welcome back to the Band Biographies podcast, part of the Pantheon Podcast Network of music-based podcasts. Visit pantheon.com to search through a plethora of different kinds of podcasts on different kinds of music. There's a show on there for everyone. On this episode, I chat to David Green, drummer in US pop-punk band Moonraker, who have been a unit since 2011, releasing numerous singles and EPs, as well as 3 full-length albums, the most recent of which, The Forest, was released in May 2022. To celebrate the anniversary of this album, and to get us ready for new music, Moonraker has released a video for the song I Really Wanted To, where the band face off against another team in a deadly game of whirlyball. No, me neither. But we talk about whirlyball in detail, as well as David's musical inspirations, what's wrong with a certain retiring punk band, secret hotel room vandalism, why pop music is benefiting from going punk, and much more. You can find Moonraker on Instagram and Twitter at MoonrakerPunks with an X, Facebook.com/Moonraker, and Bandcamp at moonraker.bandcamp.com, as well as on all the streaming platforms and YouTube. Please do let me know what you thought of the episode by going to Apple Podcasts and leaving a review, as well as a 5-star rating, of course, or on social media. It'd be great if you could share this episode far and wide as well, and if you could let the band know you heard of them through this podcast. But without further ado, here's my interview with David Green of Moonraker. David Green from Moonraker, thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And secondly, also thanks to Mike Kubilos from Earshot Media as well for setting this up. He's become my go-to guy at the moment. He's providing a lot of awesome content at the moment.
So yeah, he seems to be a lot of people's go-to guy. He's real cool.
He must be the busiest guy, the busiest PR guy in the world.
Yeah, he's doing what's up. You know, he's cool.
Just to kind of start off with, I tend to, before we get into the band and your career and all that kind of thing, I tend to go back to the beginning to find out a little bit about you and what got you here. So yeah, David, I mean, what was the first song that you remember hearing that made you think, I think I could do that, I'd like to try and make music my thing, my career perhaps?
Man, that's being super generous with like how I thought about anything when I was a kid. Like, I think that probably is like the underlined of what I probably was feeling, but I never thought that. Like as a, it wasn't like I heard this song that I fell in love with and was like, I want to do that. It was more like, that song sounds cool and it makes me feel good, kind of a thing. You know, it was never like, I don't know, it just sort of kept happening until it was happening. I never really was able to like put anything into words like that. You know?
Fair enough. No, that's cool. So what was the first single or album that you bought with your own money then in that case? And I'm hoping to undercut any kind of punk credibility that you have with this.
Oh, I don't have any credibility. When I was a kid, my neighbor had like this older, like we were in elementary school and she was in high school and she was like really cool. So she always had like cool like cassette tapes that she would have recorded from like the radio. So we would listen to stuff like that. So it would have been stuff like, you know, 90s alternative, like Hey Jealousy and stuff like that, which I still love that song. Honestly, the first record I ever bought was Dookie by Green Day, which again, not to undercut your undercutting of my punk credibility, was probably bought in the same week as like Third Eye Blind and like, you know, whatever, like Sugar Ray or whatever else was going on at the time. But, you know, I still am wildly in love with Dookie. I think it's an incredible record and it changed my life.
The thing with it is it's popular as well, right? Like it was everywhere. Yeah. Like
absolutely. So. And that's definitely, it was like, I definitely had no cred. It was not like an underground thing. I knew it because it was on television. I knew it because it was on the radio. I did not know Kerplunk because I was like 6 or 8 or whatever, however old I was, you know. It was like, I was a child. I just watched a lot of television as a kid. So like Comedy Central would play just reruns of Saturday Night Live for like hours, like every day. And I would just watch that, and like basically whoever was the musical guest on that particular rerun of SNL, I kind of would like become aware of. And yeah, whatever, you know, I watched a lot of MTV, a lot of VH1, a lot of television. So whatever 90s alternative radio and television was telling me to like, I probably liked for a minute.
Yeah, yeah. So from your neighbor's older sister, I mean, like, were you hanging out? Were you kind of trading tapes and that kind of thing as well? Or was it just...
Oh, again, that's giving me way more credit of knowing how to use any sort of tape recorder when I was a kid. No, it was basically if she was driving us somewhere, like to school or something, and she had like a tape going on and it was like, you know, like, I don't know, Bad Habit by The Offspring. And then like that bridge comes in with like all of those curse words and you're like, oh my god, this rules,
you know? Am I allowed to be listening to this?
Yeah.
That's great. And was drums always your instrument, or did you start on something else and go to drums?
Drums was always what I played. It was never anything else. I could sort of get around on a keyboard, but not really. Like I don't have like the 10 finger dexterity to do that. I can like kind of like type it out with like my index fingers if I need to.
But I've always got a fascination with drummers because it's one of those things you need to completely disconnect each limb individually to be able to do something completely different. And it's like, I've never been able to pat my head and rub my stomach as well. So like, you know.
Yeah, it's tough.
When did you start?
I was 9.
Right.
Yeah, I was young. Again, there was no ulterior motive or anything. Like a lot of people I know, like start playing guitar like in junior high or high school because they want to be in a band or whatever. I have no idea what I was thinking I wanted to do with playing drums. It was just sort of something I wanted to do. Because everything else, like as a kid, you know, like you're kind of forced to do a bunch of stuff. Like,
yeah.
And I knew I didn't care for any of the other things that I was, you know, very bad at, like Little League and et cetera, you know. Mm-hmm. I was asked to leave the Boy Scouts because I kept falling asleep in all the meetings and stuff like that. So it was very much like, I need to stop doing these things that I'm being made to do. And for some reason, that was the one thing I wanted to do. So
Right. Okay. So did you start like with lessons or were you completely kind of, you know, just playing along to whatever you had on at home?
No, I took lessons for like a really long time.
Right. So you're properly trained anyway. So
yeah. I went to like music college and everything too.
Wow. Okay.
I'm like too trained.
Right. Okay. That's interesting. Cause like some people pick things up because they just want to kind of have a go, but clearly this was, I mean, so going to music college, what was the impetus for that? Was it that you wanted by that point, had you decided that like music was going to be the career that you wanted to follow?
Yeah, it was definitely that. But again, more than that, it was that I didn't know what else I was going to do. And I didn't really kind of have a thought about what I was, you know, it's like, I don't know, in school and stuff, like, especially like when you're a kid, like they always ask you what you want to be when you grow up. And I never, it never even occurred to me to have that. Like, it's like, I did not know what I was going to do. I didn't have really a goal, but I eventually it was like, well, of course I'm going to do this because it's the only thing I like and it's the only constant thing I've been doing. But before it even like occurred to me that it could be a thing, it was just more like, well, my parents have made it abundantly clear that I need to go to college and I have never considered that in my 4 years in high school. I did not take the classes or the seriousness that it would have required me to go to regular college. And but I can play these drums pretty okay. You know, maybe let's look into that, you know?
So were you in bands at that point? Had you kind of joined any bands in high school?
Yeah, I played in bands like all through high school. And yeah, pretty much since I was like 14 or 15, 13. I don't know. I've been playing in bands since I was in like junior high.
Mm. I've always found drummers are the ones who are always in most demand because it's the biggest instrument to lug around, and not many people.
Yeah.
Not many people have the understanding parents, I guess, that you must have had. You know.
Yes. Luckily, my mom had a minivan, so it was easier to move stuff. And yeah, it definitely helped me figure out who I was, being able to play with people and do that in school.
And was it always kind of punk bands, or were you playing different styles of music and you know, what kind of styles were they?
Well, the bands that I personally was in were always punk bands. I played in like the school band forever. Like I was in like marching band and jazz band and concert band. So I can play other styles. Again, like you said, I hate to use like air quotes, classically trained or whatever, but I can do other stuff if I needed to.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I don't particularly like to. But yeah, no, I any of my personal bands were all always some form of a punk band. The earlier ones were mostly shitty covers, but you know.
Oh yeah, we've all played in one of those. So who were your kind of influences then? I mean, you were talking about Dookie and Green Day and The Offspring being particular kind of highlights when you were young. Like, did you continue down that kind of I want to say pop punk vein, but like where did your musical journey take you?
Well, I still love Green Day quite a bit. They're just fantastic. I was in love with NoFX when I was young, and for a long time after I was young. I was like a band that really made a huge difference on just the way I kind of looked at stuff. Bad Religion, obviously. I still am obsessed with Bad Religion. I can't me and Nick from our band, we kind of talk about like we kind of see the world through like Bad Religion colored lenses, you know. Like anything we do is going to have like a tinge of that involved, you know.
Yeah. Well, I see you got a couple of the posters up in the background. You got the Bad Religion Crossbuster and Anti-Flag right. as well.
Yes. So love Anti-Flag.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, those are the trinity for me as well. Like Anti-Flag, Bad Religion, and NoFX are like the three that I tend to go to if I'm listening to that kind of music.
Yeah. And you know, again, I'm from Southern California, so that kind of played a little bit of a part into, like, you know, you can't listen to punk in LA and listen to like the radio and like not see the Crossbuster anywhere.
Sure.
Plus it's just cool. It's just a really cool logo.
It is. Yeah. And it's instantly kind of, it's almost iconic really, isn't it? I mean,
oh yeah, big time. It's just distilled. This is what, you don't even need to know the band is called Bad Religion to know the band is called Bad Religion when you see that.
And NoFX as well. I mean, how are you feeling about them calling it a day and doing all their farewell tours?
I kind of stressed a little bit. I loved them so much when I was younger, and I still really like them because I loved them so much. But I have not been the biggest NoFX fan in the last decade. I think, you know, I don't want to like be shit talking NoFX or anything. Although I don't think they have like Beyonce level fans that are gonna like come after me. So I think we're all pretty aware of how NoFX sounds live recently, and I think it's okay that they're you know, although I think the last record was way better than the one before it. I'll say
yes.
That.
Yeah. Lots of people complained about that double record. And
I think double record is so much better. Single album is unlistenable. Yeah. Unlistenable. Yeah. It's so bad. I don't know what they were thinking.
It almost feels to me like they're winding it up because they've got no ideas left almost.
Dude, I could go all day about what I think happened on Single Album and that band recently, but I don't think we have enough time right now, but I could.
I'd love to get into it, but I think, yeah, it's probably, I mean, the fact that they're reciting, I'm going to stop. So what was the first band you saw live anyway?
I usually have a really good memory, but like I think it all blends together at this point. Like I don't really have like a great answer to that question, like who's the first band, because like my mom was a middle school choir director, so I kind of grew up going to see like her like school performances and stuff, and like I was always like kind of taken to like concerts in the park kind of stuff, and like so like, or like because I was interested in music, I was like, you know, like relatives or whatever would always like want to take me to like see stuff that like they were into or they thought I was into, and then like started going to like local shows and stuff. So I really don't have like a pinpoint first like real band or even like band that I don't even remember. Like I can't really remember the first one.
It's difficult, especially like local live shows and stuff. But like big bands, I suppose. I don't know, like mine stuck in my head because I had to leave school. I had to make up an excuse school with one of my classmates, and it was Newfound Glory.
That's awesome.
Supported by Finch, who I'd never heard of. And it was the first time I'd heard them, and they blew Newfound Glory away. It was And then like that first album of Finch's as well, like the EP and the first album are just outstanding.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I definitely had an experience like that where with NoFX, actually, me and my friend Jeff, we left school early. It was Wolves was coming out, Wolves in Wolves Clothing, but it was, I think the Never Trust a Hippie EP had just come out and Wolves was about to come out, and they were doing all of these secret shows in LA. Like they did like a MySpace secret show like at the Roxy, and they were playing a secret show at the Whiskey A Go Go in LA. Mm-hmm. We left school early, like at lunch. And we like drove to LA because we're like, you know, 40 minutes away. And we waited. The line was already like wrapped around the building. And like we just waited there for like hours, and it started raining and we still couldn't get in. It was like a whole thing. Oh, no.
Well, I remember that. Like, I don't know whether it happens anymore where you are, but I remember going to gigs up in London, you know, places like the Brixton Academy or the Kentish Town Forum, and having to queue around the block for gigs.
Yeah.
And it seems like
it happens still.
Does it? It seems like I don't know whether there are fast passes and stuff now, but it just doesn't seem.
Oh, that would be so cool.
Because over here, a lot of the venues like the Brixton Academy are owned by O2, the cell phone operator. And if you're an O2 customer, you get to skip the queue.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Well, yeah, like a lot of like bands of a certain tier do that. It's kind of like a, I don't know. I kind of feel like it's like an obvious cash grab or whatever, where you do like the VIP package or whatever, where you get to come in and watch sound check or whatever, or like, you know, like there's always some sort of ridiculous piece of merch that you get to that's like, but you end up paying like double at the end of everything, and
yep,
there is that, but I'm never doing that.
No, I think it's a bit of a I'm not down with that personally. So who would you say is the best band you've ever seen live then? Who's your favorite band to go and watch?
It's either Bad Religion or the Descendants. Like they are you don't think, again, like talking about NoFX, and like, you know, you're going to see these dudes in their 50s and they just show up and they're like, oh, we're probably not going to be that good live. And that maybe used to be the grift. Like they would tell you they're not going to be good live, and then they're all of a sudden really good. But that hasn't been really going on. But like you watch Bad Religion and they just come out there and they're just like the oldest men you've ever seen. And they just rip it up like nothing. Like it's just like, and the Descendants are just the best band in the world. Like it's just like the four best people that have ever done their thing. And they just go up there and they're like 60 and they just kill it so hard, and it's just unfair to anybody. A Wilhelm Scream are obviously incredible live. That's a little different. I can't even fathom like that. So like there's like, you know, like there's stuff with like I can learn how to play Bad Religion songs. Like that new Wilhelm Scream record, I can't even air drum to, you know.
Some people are just too fast. It's almost like they record it at some speed and then crank it up by three or something, you know?
Totally, yeah.
But yeah, no, I'm off to see Rancid next week. And
hell yeah.
I'm really looking forward to that because I haven't been able to... I haven't caught them live yet, so...
Oh, man, that's awesome. That is going to be so good.
Yeah, because the new album that dropped last week is incredible. It's one of their best ones for years.
Tomorrow Never Comes. Yeah, it's good. Yeah. I was listening to it yesterday.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And also, they're being supported by a band from over here called Grade 2, who are kind of Britain's answer to Rancid, I guess. Like,
okay, I don't think I've heard them, but I've seen their name on like Dying Scene, I think.
Yeah, they. I think they're supporting Rancid over there at whatever couple of shows they're playing. I can't remember where they're playing over there, but yeah, they're on Hellcat, and cool. you can kind of hear the Tim Armstrong hand, because like they started out as a kind of quite brash oi punk band,
okay,
and now they've got this like they've got these melodies, and you can hear the bassist being a little bit more Matt Freeman. And cool. they're like, it's almost like they're getting ready the successors, almost, you know.
Oh yeah, because you said you play bass, man. You love Matt Freeman. That's awesome.
Yeah, I can't.
He's so good.
I can't do any of those. Some of them I can keep up with, but there are some where I just like, how many fingers does this guy have,
dude? On like Rancid 2000, where he's just like unchained, he's like Axiom and Young Al Capone, just going for it.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Because awesome. You're like, well, I don't even know where the root is on any of this. It doesn't make any sense to me at all. Like, where are you starting?
Yeah, it's like, did he like pour like WD-40 all over his strings to be able to like slide quickly on everything?
Yeah, no, he's incredible. So I'm really looking forward to seeing him play live. So when did Moonraker come around? Let's get on to the main thing. Let's stop talking about me.
Let's do it.
You've been around for at least 2014, right? Because you got the String Theory.
String Theory, yeah. The EP was in 2014. Yeah, we started playing in 2011, but it was a different animal. It didn't look or really sound like it does now. I think 2014 was sort of when it kind of clicked into what we were trying to do now was around then. But yeah, me and Nick started playing in Moonraker in 2011. Yeah.
Okay. And because I love some of the song titles from your albums as well. Stuff like Back from the Dead Arseholes, and this is the Shark Week of Our Discontent as well, which I really like.
thank you. I was really proud of that title.
I appreciate a witty title, and there are quite a few of those throughout your kind of back catalog. So did you guys get together over an appreciation of bands like NoFX and Bad Religion and that lot? Did you set out to kind of play music inspired by, or?
No, that was not actually. I mean, that's definitely how me and Nick became friends for sure. But we had different people in the band at that time, and there was definitely a different mission. Like, again, that's always my favorite music. But I like a bunch of other, you know, I'm not strictly just like a Epitaph Fat SoCal punk. I know I've been mostly just listed stuff like that. But like, no, So I met Nick like a year or two before we started the band, and we were playing in other bands, and it was quickly kind of like known to both of us that we're like, oh, that guy is into this stuff that I'm into, and we should be friends. And like, so like our two bands became like really good friends, and we like would play shows together, but then me and Nick would like also just be like hanging out a lot outside of band stuff. And when both of our bands ended up breaking up, and I was, me and this guy Matt Battaglia, who was like sort of in my previous band, but like it was like sort of like our bass player had left to go to school, and he was like filling in on bass in our band, so he was playing all those shows with Nick's band, so we all knew each other, and we worked at this music store together, and we were starting Moonraker, and we needed a bass player, and I was like, well, I think it has to be Nick, and like that, but like it was. He was more of like a kind of like melodic hardcore guy, Matt. And, it was definitely, I think, his intention and mine. And like, we, you know, like to kind of be more of like a Strike Anywhere type band that did not end up happening. mostly cause I'm just not a political person. Like, I don't follow a lot of stuff, and it would be unbelievable, if I was up there writing, cool fist in the air politics songs. Yeah, it just wouldn't make sense.
Yeah, there are some bands that can do that and some bands that can't. And yeah, unless I always feel like unless you really know your stuff and are actively political.
Yeah, that was sort of that vibe. And then eventually when he wasn't in the band anymore and we were kind of cycling through guitar players and stuff, and then it was like, it was always going to sound like kind of Alkaline Trio influence. There was never going to be, I feel like that was like, it was never going to not be that. It just sort of didn't start that way, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Because I was going to say, like, two of the bands that I definitely put down as, like, what I can hear elements in there is NoFX and Descendants. So I've got my ears tuned right by the sounds of it.
They're fantastic, you know?
And so, you know, over the years, I mean, have you, I assume, like, you all have day jobs.
Yeah.
But like,
well, some of us do. Right. I don't currently have I drive Uber Eats, but it's like, that's sort of like a when I do or when it's not, I'm not like proactive enough with it for it to be like an actual job. Like,
so how does that kind of thing, like, because obviously, like you say, you've been going since 2011, you found your sound in like 2014. Do you go out on tours of the state of the of a region of the US? Like, to a lot of Britons, the US seems like a massive like almost incomprehensible thing to kind of figure out how smaller bands get started. And
yeah, when we first started, like, we completely did it backwards. Like the first tour we ever did was to Florida to go to the fest just to attend it. It was like, because like all our bands before this was way more regional stuff, like NorCal, kind of like Northern California, like West Coast kind of runs, or like regional Southwest, kind of Nevada, Arizona kind of loop things, yeah. Which again is just a smarter thing to do. But we were, you know, we're like, well, we've definitely toured before, and you know, like the fest lineup looks amazing. We should probably book this national tour just to go watch these bands we like. And then midway through the booking was like, oh yeah, I've never booked a national tour before. I've booked shows in Arizona.
So how do you figure that? You all just get in a van and go?
Yeah, that's how it was. It was, yeah. Get in the van and go. And that was pretty much still how it is. It's a little bit more smart now. It's a little bit more like you pick the places you know aren't going to be total busts, and you pick the times when you know it's like I don't know if we really need to be going out in the dead of winter again. But I've done like so many Canadian tours in January and February. Oh. It's like, why did we do that?
So how many tours do you do? Have you been on then? Is it like cycle thing, or is it just constantly?
Yeah, it depends on what's happening with everyone's jobs and with everyone's lives and with the when the record's coming out and stuff. But like last year we did like a West Coast run, and we did kind of like a loop around the like kind of Midwest South kind of area. We were actually in Bristol last summer for the Booze Cruise Festival, and that was really cool. And everyone's got their jobs going and working on that, but we're setting a bunch of stuff up for the fall. We're playing Fest again, so that'll be cool. We've got some stuff around that, and probably before and after. And yeah, we're just kind of gearing up for the fall and plans for next year and stuff. But we do it when we can, and we try to be able to, you know, as much as like Nick and Matt, their jobs are both remote, so if they needed to work from the road, they can.
That makes it a hell of a lot easier, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's just about the planning. It's like, maybe we can't do, like, if it's like a day that they're supposed to be working, it can't be like a 7-hour drive. It has to be more of like a, either we're in the town that we're going to play, or like a couple hours away, so they can, like, you know, spend the day doing their jobs, and then we can drive to the show kind of a
yeah.
thing.
Yeah, fair play. And so how does songwriting happen? Is there one person in the band who kind of leads that area, or do you all have, like, do you bring an idea in and then everyone works on it together,
I think it can be both. It's more along, there's usually one person kind of steering it, but all of us are putting our fingerprints on it, like, kind of a thing. So whether it's like Nick has like a cool idea for like a melody, or like Matt has a cool riff, or like I have like lyrics or something. Like it usually kind of like someone is showing someone something, and then the other people are like, oh, you know, it would be cool for that, this, or
yeah.
It's usually not the three of us like in a room plugged in with our gear and being like, all right, anyone have any ideas? And then everyone just sits there not having any ideas. You know, it's usually someone has to come with an idea. Otherwise, we're wasting everyone's time.
And I don't know about you, but I think the three-piece, for me, is the easiest way to do things. It's the fewest amount of people that you need, generally speaking, kind of make the to make the right noise. It's the most perfect amount of people to actually organize into, like, getting together for a practice.
Exactly. It's the least amount of schedules you have to deal with. The most room if you're shoving everybody into a van.
Also, I think it's like there's not too many ideas floating about, and there aren't too many egos getting in the way as well.
Yeah.
Because exactly. I don't know about you. I've been in bands where one person is the songwriter and you play the song how they wrote it, and there's very little deviation.
Right. Yeah. I'm David Ruffin and these are the Temptations.
Yeah, exactly that. But I've also been like the bands that I'm in currently are all quite democratic. Like everyone gets their say. And actually, I think that's a better environment to be in, where, you know, you bring in the idea of a song and you're not quite 100% sure on how to finish it. And then you've got two other people's ideas coming in, and often, in fact, almost always, it makes a better song, I think, in the end.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like I have like an idea of what I think something should sound like, but like it always is better when it's not 100% what I thought it should be, because like I was probably wrong, and Nick and Matt were probably right, and it's like, yeah, it's like ideally you want it to not be like a, like, it's not a compromise, it's a collaboration, right? Like you want it to be a true, like, no one's like, oh, I guess we'll do it your way this time. Like you want it to be like, no, of course, you know, it should be this. I'll bring these ingredients, you bring those ingredients. So it's like you want it to be a collaboration and not like a begrudging compromise kind of a thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So your most recent album, The Forest, has been out for a little over a year.
Yeah.
And to celebrate the fact that it's been out a year, you released a video for the song I Really Wanted To.
Yes.
Firstly, what the hell is Whirly Ball? I've seen Whirly the video Ball, and I still don't understand. It looks like go-karting meets lacrosse.
It's something like that. Yeah, it's like my friend Tyler Colton, who plays in this band Goodbye Viking, he used to tour as our guitar player. When he was with us and we would go on tour, he kind of introduced us to this game. And they only really have it in certain parts of America. Like they have it in Fort Worth, Texas, where we shot the video. They have it in Chicago. They have it in Atlanta. They have it like in like little pockets. So whenever we're on tour, like we try real hard to get a game in, and it's bumper cars meets lacrosse meets drunk driving is what it is. You're like, you're in a bumper car that you steer with like a little like crank, like a joystick. Like, have you ever been in like a bumper boat?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
That's sort of the control system. It's not like a steering wheel, like a regular bumper car. So you're in this car, with your little like joystick, and then you have like a little plastic, scoop, and there's like a wiffle ball bouncing around, and then there's two backboards for like basketballs, but there's no nets. So the point is to try to get your wiffle ball onto the backboard, before the other team, you know, stops you. And mostly it's, you know, used for children's parties, or like the one in Texas is kind of like a family fun center. The one in Chicago is more of like a upscale, like hipster bowling alley type place. Like, right. they have like couches instead of chairs, and like the yeah. balls look like big pool balls and stuff. And that's mostly used for like team building exercises for like companies. Like, they'll bring like all their employees there, and it's supposed to like teach them to like, oh, pass the ball to your coworker. And that way in the office, you'll like be a team. And we just go in there and get shit faced, and like, we just yell at them like from the side, like, you're not even crashing into each other. What are you doing? You're doing it all wrong. And like, and then we go in there and just like, just beat the shit out of each other.
So it is a regular thing that you do when you're on tour, when you can.
When we can, and when we're in the right spot, we're making it happen. Absolutely.
It looks like a lot of fun. I mean, I also enjoyed the score line at the end of your game.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Any Bill and Ted fans out there?
Yeah, that was my note. I was like, that should be the score.
And who were the other guys that in the opposing team?
So my friend Matt Cypress directed the video, and those were just one of them was our friend Aaron Dowd. He's awesome. He used to play drums in a band called Not Half Bad, and he plays drums in bands in Texas and stuff. Mm. And the other two guys were just friends of Matt's that he had come down to help us out.
They meet a kind of grisly end as well.
It's, that's right.
Well, that's what you get. So how good at the game are you guys in real life? I suppose if you're drunk, probably not.
Yeah, exactly. We're pretty good, but also not as good as we think we are. But it was very funny because like Nick showed up to the shoot. Like, we were like in the room, and he like had bought a couple of his own whirly ball like rackets. So we're like that's hilarious, because like we didn't want to ruin any of theirs. So like the one that obviously in the video, he you could see him taping a switchblade to. So we're like, well, we shouldn't do that. So we were like kind of like fooling around with his rackets, just like talking about shots for the video, like before we went to the shoot, like kind of passing this ball back and forth, like not paying attention, and like we're like catching, we're like, are we like accidentally really good at this? But like, no, we're not. We care more about like it being funny than we do about like sportsmanship,
And is that kind of the way that you approach a lot of things, like as a band? Is it fun? Yeah. Fun. Not saying that you're not professional about what you do, but like, is it first and foremost fun? Because it seems to be like the songs are all quite, like I say, that they've got that kind of NoFX slightly kind of tongue in cheek. And the song titles and stuff like that, kind of leads you to believe that maybe it's good fun being in Moonraker.
I think it's a lot of fun being in Moonraker. I've never not been. Well, I mean, I have, but like I've never been in not Moonraker since Moonraker was around. Sure. So like I don't know if it would be different or whatever. But other bands probably have a lot of fun too. We tend to try to have a lot of fun. It's serious. We take it very serious, sometimes to the detriment of like our mental health sometimes. It is very important and serious, but at the same time we take not taking it serious very seriously. If that makes sense. Like, it's gotta be. We played a show in Omaha, Nebraska one time, and this guy showed up to the show, and he was like going on about like how the last time we were in town, he was very excited to come see us, but he ended up getting arrested and having to go to like jail. And he said he was more bummed that he missed our show than he was about being in jail that night. And then I was like, that's weird. And he was like, no, but you guys have this way about like, you're going through hard stuff, but you're not taking it serious to like not give the hard stuff the upper hand. I'm like, yeah, that's, again, I'm so bad about like thinking forward about stuff like this. And that is correct. That was my feeling when we were writing those songs. I just never like, wrote down the mission statement, into the ether or anything. It was just sort of the back of my head. But yeah, it is more about like life's kicking your ass sometimes, and you can't let life smile while it's doing it. So you have to kind of not take it seriously to make life not feel as good about it, because it's going to be kicking your ass regardless. But if it sees you crying, then it's going to be smiling about it. So you kind of have to be like, oh, cool, you're just going to keep kicking me? Cool, fuck you. You know, that kind of thing.
I think that's a good outlook to have. And so is there anything else that you guys do when you're on tour, for example, to keep it light? Because I know that touring can be a slog.
Yeah, I mean, we have all sorts. So we do this we do this thing where anytime we stay in a hotel, we take the paintings off the walls of the hotel and draw penises on the wall and then put the painting back up. And and over the years, it's just evolved into, at first it was just like, let's just draw the biggest penis we could draw. And then it turned into like, okay, well, what is the penis wearing? Okay, what movie is this referencing? Is the penis dressed up like Pulp Fiction? Is like, you know, that kind of thing. So it's definitely gotten to more of that, to the point where now it's I'm trying to get enough pictures of these to like make like a coffee table book, I think, is the goal.
I was going to ask if you documented them in any way.
Well, at first we didn't. At first we were just doing it. So there's like a bunch of missed opportunities for that. But eventually we started like, oh yeah, let's take pictures of these too. And then like, you know, over the years, like it's like the, you know, like the paintings are bolted down. They're bolted to the wall. So we like got a special wrench to be able to unbolt the paintings.
So all over America and Canada, there are.
Yeah. And we did it in England.
Oh, right. Okay. When were you last in England?
Last summer we played the Bristol Booze Cruise Festival.
So somewhere in Bristol, there is a hotel room with a penis behind one of the pictures, if not all of them.
Yeah, it's actually three penises. It's one that looks like Queen Elizabeth, and she's got two guards next to her.
That's ingenious. I like that a lot. That feels like a crime where no one gets hurt.
Exactly, because like what's gonna happen? Like unless they like took the paintings off after the people that checked in before us, and they took them off after we left, they're not going to be able to know it was us. It could have been literally anybody. And the only time they're taking those paintings off is when they're going to repaint the wall or put new wallpaper up anyway. So they were already going to, it doesn't matter. victimless crime.
I like the idea of it becoming the next kind of Banksy kind of thing. No one knows who's,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So kind of getting back to the video, like how long did it take to shoot? I can imagine it was quite a grueling shoot, really, because
it was a day. We shot it because we had to rent the court for a few hours, and they were so cool about giving us a bunch of extra time. Like we showed up early, like when we didn't have the booking for the court, and like kind of like, well, we spent the whole day kind of getting everything ready, like getting all the props ready, getting all like the, like, okay, we'll do it for this shot. You know, like trying to figure out exactly what we were going to do. We got there kind of early to kind of like set up what we needed to set up. And then I think we had the court for 3 hours, which we ate through the first half of like so quick, like an hour and a half went by like 10 minutes when we were doing that. And then they ended up giving us like 2 extra hours for free, which was super cool of them, considering we were real drunk and like there was like weapons and like fake blood and stuff going on.
It feels like there should have been an insurance company involved somewhere.
Yeah, they were really cool.
So what was the thinking about making a video for a song that's essentially a year old? I mean, is it just kind of feeding the algorithm, if you like, or is it that like in preparation for new material from Moonraker?
I think it's a little bit of both. I definitely wouldn't say anything gross like feeding the algorithm or anything. But it was more along the lines of like, we were doing another, like we put out a video a few months ago, before that, for our song, My First Rodeo. And that was sort of one that, our friend Matt, who directed, both of those, he kind of had put together that on his own. Like we had like a party at my house like last year, and he threw, it was actually a baby shower. It was hilarious, which you would never think it was after all those shots of Super Soakers full of whiskey being shot in everyone's face. But he was just filming us partying, and then he sent us essentially that video like set to that song, and we're like, yo, this this is just a video. We could film us playing and insert it into that. And that's just a video kind of a thing. And he lives in Texas, and it was kind of just an excuse to go kind of hang out with him. But also, like, we had like 3/4 of a video kind of just sitting there anyway. So we're like, why don't we go over there? We'll get in a practice space. He can film us playing. We'll put that in the video.
Hmm.
But if we're there, why don't we do some? Because we knew the 1-year anniversary of the record was coming up. So we did want to do something kind of fun for that. Because, like, the record means a lot to us. And we wanted to keep kind of, like, kind of putting it in front of people. And, like, we thought that it being out for a year was a good reason to kind of celebrate it. And, yeah, so we're like, we're going out there anyway. We'll film 2 videos. So we filmed 1 on Friday and 1 on Saturday. And,
okay.
Yeah, and we're you know, working on there's new stuff coming. So it's a little bit of everything, but it was mostly like we're super proud of the record and we wanted to kind of keep, you know, it's fun. It was a fun idea and we really liked that song. So it was like kind of a reason to kind of like maybe introduce that song to some people that hadn't heard the record. And yeah.
Yeah. And like I said, the album itself of The Forest is great. I mean,
thank you.
You can hear the progression with each album, you know, with the production methods and songwriting and everything. And yeah, really enjoyed it. But I don't know whether you found, because I don't suppose, like you're saying, the algorithm doesn't come into your thought process at all. It's something...
What am I, Neo?
Yeah, it's just one of these things. It's like, it seems to be you either release a song or an EP every month or two, or you wait a couple of years to release a full album. I don't know whether it's, I don't know which one is the right way to do things, you know?
Yeah, it's supposed to be art, right? And like when you talk about algorithms and stuff, that's very not art, right? That's very like kind of like pointed, you know, capitalism, consumerism. That's very like numbers oriented, literally. And I don't know. I think it's kind of just supposed to be art. It is supposed to be heard by people also, though. So I do understand that. But we've never been like one of those bands that's like, you know, algorithm first and, you know, whatever makes sense businessly, you know, makes more sense than the art of it.
Yeah.
Like we're trying real hard to be big goons over here. But like underneath it, we are also trying to be artists, you know.
And that's the proper answer, I think, to that. I think anything being made for the algorithm is not being made with artistic integrity in mind. It's it's being machine tooled to, because you hear all this stuff about like, oh, you've got to get to the chorus within 3 seconds of the track starting, and you're like,
3 seconds?
It's something like that. Like there are various rules, and it's like you don't
start
if you haven't caught people within the first 8 seconds of a song being played, then they could quite easily skip it. And it's like, well, if people's attention span is that short, I don't want them listening to my music anyway.
Again, I think people are a little bit better than the distilled, you know, thing that people say people are like. And I,
yeah,
what, you can't 3 seconds till the chorus, like then like how many times are you doing your chorus? You gotta do like 5 choruses in that song if you're opening with it. And like I don't want the song to be longer than 3-3.5 minutes, and that's like a billion choruses, and that will lose your attention. What do you tell 3 seconds?
Yeah, it's nuts, isn't it? It feels like a lot of pop music is going back almost towards a kind of 1950s and 60s thing, where like if you think about all those kind of Motown groups and Beatles and stuff, a lot of it is just like one chord. Like for example, Hard Day's Night, it's just like clang, it's been a heart, it goes straight into it.
That does go into the chorus there, yes. That's that
and
is true.
But all the songs, all the songs are less than 2 minutes long, and I think that's,
yeah,
that seems to be where pop music,
oh my god,
is going.
If you're, if your like... song is 4 minutes long, you better have a really good reason for it being 4 minutes long, man. If I see the length of your song before I hear the song, I'm like already against it. You know, it's like you got a lot of uphill working to do to make me like on board with this long song. No, it's interesting, because like there's people that turn their nose up at like, you know, like modern punk kind of needs to sound more like modern pop production, where it's like, okay, mm-hmm. It needs to have more beats in it, like more fake drums, more kind of synth, more kind of like, you know, kind of pop sensibility and stuff. But if you look at like modern pop music, everyone is like trying to like be inspired by punk fashion, and everyone's trying to like, so if pop people are trying to kind of be like, you know, like, and then also, yeah, obviously, like with Travis Barker, like being like the go-to, you know, hip hop producer or whatever. Yeah. So like when you have like Willow Smith up there trying to be pop punk, like why is pop punk trying to be, you know, mainstream pop if it's one hand feeding the other and like talking about like, oh, well, guitars shouldn't sound like guitars because that makes it sound dated and no one really likes that sound. But if you like I read a statistic about like certain hip hop songs, and if like the rap song doesn't have like a live like kind of like guitar and like kind of like band in it, it statistically doesn't do as well. Really? Like as one that's just like kind of the beat. And I could be talking out of my ass here, but I did read that where it was like something where it's like the live instrumentation on top of the beats and stuff kind of help that in a way that it doesn't if it's not. So it's like, I don't know why everyone is like busting their balls and like, you know, turning their nose up at like, you know, a traditional like, oh, this has drums and bass and guitar and that is the instrumentation of it. There's no 808s.
Yeah, I feel it's a little bit of people trying to find a kind of shortcut to success, right, which in this case is numbers, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, download numbers, streaming numbers, whatever. And yeah, like you say, like I've read that thing about 3 seconds, 8 seconds, whatever it is. You've read that thing about hip hop and like real instrumentation, but there isn't a formula to good music. Good music is just good music, no. Right? Like, and it's played by people who give a shit. And with heart,
absolutely. And I think that always kind of like you can smell that if the song was written without it. I think you could. It's pretty clear when it was bullshit and when it wasn't.
Yeah, so. I mean, going back to the kind of Willow Smiths and Mod Sun type stuff, where you're like, that's nah, it's not.
Yeah,
punk.
Exactly.
It's you're trying to look same. Punk, but you're not. Yeah, and it's like basically Travis Barker's entire label.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like, you know. Well, they certainly do better than we do.
Hey, but... look, he's got a thing going on, and it's doing him very well indeed. You know, so more power to him, I guess. But it's just, yeah, it's not really for me.
No. Yeah. Yeah. Same.
So you said you were playing Fest later on this year again. Have you played there before? Obviously, you went there first off. You made a tour just to go there. And how many times have you played that festival?
This will be Moonraker's third time playing as Moonraker at the Fest. Me and Nick filled in on drums and bass for Not Half Bad in 2016.
Okay.
And then one time we played, like, we were there and there was like kind of like a show going on, but it wasn't a Fest show, but it was like at a venue in Gainesville next to a couple of the Fest, you know, like, so like, but that wasn't us playing Fest, that was us playing a show in Gainesville during Fest.
Yeah.
At like a laser tag place. But this will be the third year that we're playing, that Moonraker is playing the Fest. So I'm couldn't be more excited and proud about it. I it's my favorite thing. It just makes me feel like a person, you know, just.
And what is it about Fest? Like, what's the setup? Is it a bunch of venues playing all through the day, or is it a festival site with multiple stages? What's the setup?
So it's downtown Gainesville, Florida. So it's like a college town. So there's bars and venues kind of everywhere. And it's all day. The first day usually starts around 5. Second day starts probably around 11. And it's just third day, same thing. Third day starts like a little later because everyone's a little hungover. So like it'll usually start around 1 and it'll probably be acoustic-y kind of starting to like kind of ease everyone back into it. But it's bars all over town. The wristband gets you into all the shows. I mean, if the venue's not at capacity, so if you know, you might have to wait in a line for a second till the changeover between bands. And there's like, you know, like an outdoor main stage, kind of like a festival style, like, you know, outdoor main stage. And then there's a couple other kind of bigger venues, but then there's like all sorts of small bars and like, you know, a stage in a park. And you just like walking around and, everyone's there. There's a big football game that happens. I don't remember what the other team is, but the school that's in Gainesville, it's like a big rivalry game, and everyone from the school leaves the town that weekend to go to this football game, and then we all come in. So it's sort of like everyone walking the streets there is just cool. You just know you're in like the right place until night on Saturday, because it's usually Halloween weekend. So like at a certain point on Saturday night, you're competing with like the clubs, you know, it's like college, you know, Halloween style. And that gets a little, you know, just trying to walk to this venue. You know?
4 o'clock in the morning must get really interesting around there.
Yes.
When it all kicks out. That sounds like how Slam Dunk over here started off, where it was like a bunch of venues in Leeds kind of did music, and you went around to each individual place, but there was a main stage in a park somewhere. And now it's become this thing where it's like a multi-stage festival site in two locations in the UK. I think they've just gone out into Italy and France as well. They're doing this year. So like they've really kind of, because there's a Pooza Fest as well up in Canada, isn't there?
Pooza, yeah. We've played that a few times too. It's the same vibe. It's just in Montreal. Yeah.
They sound like really cool events to go and see. It seems like you've got everything from like really, really well-known bands to quite absolutely small. Run the gamut kind of thing.
It's great. I can't say enough good things about the fest or about Pooza Fest. They're both incredible organizations, and you know, just downtown Montreal is so cool, just to be able to like walk around and see stuff, and like Gainesville's so cool, so it's like different reasons.
Different climates as well, I'd imagine.
Oh yeah.
So are you planning any other kind of big shows, big festivals this year as well?
We're talking about it. Nothing's on the books yet, announced. But we're talking about some stuff, and we have some stuff happening in the fall. So we'll be out and about, doing some things, and we're working on some ideas. We're meeting up in a couple weeks to maybe try to get some gears going about maybe writing some songs. So that'll be cool. We'll be announcing some stuff.
Okay, because that was going to be my next thing. What was next? What, you know, when are we starting kind of new material and that kind of thing?
I think there's definitely going to be some music coming out before Fest. It's not announced yet, but there will be some new Moonraker music coming out this year. And I don't know, man. It's, you know, I don't know how long things take, but we have some ideas kicking around, and we're having a writing summit in a couple weeks, and we're gonna try to flesh out some of these new song ideas and see how long that takes. But we have some stuff coming out in the fall, and there'll probably be some stuff next year. I don't know. I'm trying not to be like vague or anything. It's not like I mean, like, we're gonna try to write a record. It'll probably be written by next year and recorded next year, so it probably isn't coming out next year, but we will have some stuff coming out next year, hopefully. So
what record company is it that you're on
right now? Bipolar Records. There's Damon who runs it, super cool. They're super cool. The Forest was put out by a conglomerate of labels.
Yeah, well, that was the thing, because there's about four different companies out there, and I was like,
Well, so we were on Tiny Dragon Music. They were kind of our home. It was our buddies Adam and Drew, and later Adam was kind of not involved, and it was just Drew just really holding it down. And they put out our record Lanterns, and then we were doing The Forest, and Drew was talking about how some of his last releases, he called them NASCAR releases because of all the logos that were on them, and like how, you know, you get more eyes involved or whatever. So like, and we wanted a European label attached to it, because we knew we were going over there, and so Bearded Punk was cool enough to help out with that, and they're just great. And Damon jumped on with Bipolar, and our friend Tommy with No Time out here, and it was great. I loved that experience. Tiny Dragon ended up stopping. They're not doing it anymore, and No Time is predominantly more of like a kind of like a crust punk, kind of like a leftover cracked style, you know, kind of more like kind of like that kind of music.
And, yeah, right.
So, you know, I mean, they're great. They did the cassettes for Lanterns, and they did The Forest, obviously, and
okay,
and they're buds of ours. But yeah, right now we're riding hard for Bipolar, and I mean, we're not like, there's no contracts with anybody. So like we're free agents, you know, but we're bipolar, team bipolar, you know.
That's more than likely going to be the one that releases the next material, whatever that was going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. And any plans to come back over to the UK?
Oh man, I tell me when and I'll be there. I would love to come back next year. That would be ideally if we could come back next year and do some stuff. I just had a flight case made for my bass drum pedal, so I'm ready to use that and see what's up. We would love to. We had the best time over there, and I'd love to get back to the UK. We would love to go to mainland Europe if we could. We're gonna see what happens. We're gonna try to write some songs in the next few weeks and months and see what our schedules are looking like. But yeah, we're gonna get into it next year and ideally would love to come back to the UK.
Cool. And so just before I kind of wind it up, what bands or acts are you listening to right now? Like what are your go-tos at the moment?
It's always Alkaline Trio and it's always the Lawrence Arms. Those are in heavy rotation. I'm heartbroken. Derek just announced he was leaving Alkaline Trio, so I don't know what's gonna happen there. Derek's like my favorite drummer, so I don't know what's gonna shake up there. I don't know who they're gonna get. I mean, I would like it to be Adam Willard. I think he makes sense a lot from like a standpoint of again, I could go on for a while about why it should be Adam Willard and, or me, you know, they should just get me.
Put your hand up. Yeah. Why not?
Been listening to that new Gaslight Anthem song. I really like Positive Charge.
I don't think I've heard that yet.
Yeah. They dropped a song like a month ago.
And okay.
It's really good. I really like that. I've been listening to a lot of Less Than Jake recently. Mm-hmm. Really, really liking that. Also again, not punk, but, punk people like it. I've been really liking the Boy Genius record. I really like it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll have to check that out. I basically do this to kind of feel out things that I should be listening to. So I'm going to take that away and let you know what I think.
Yeah.
And I suppose the other thing as well, have you toured with bands like, I don't know, on the same level as, say, an Alkaline Trio, a Less Than Jake, those kinds of bands?
No.
Have you ever met any of these guys and been pleasantly surprised, should we say?
You know, it's funny because I was gonna be like, well, we absolutely have never toured with anyone that big, but like I do kind of have stories about meeting people from all of those bands, and yes and no. I don't know any of them. I have had a lot of email correspondence with Vinny, who used to play drums in Less Than Jake. I met Matt Skiba one time at a show. I got very drunk one time at a house party in Hollywood with Neil and Brendan from the Lawrence Arms.
Oh,
but
wow.
I wouldn't consider any kind of like substantial, like I don't have any stories about anybody being an asshole or like the best guy in the world. I am on the outside of all of that.
It's just, you know, sometimes you get on these, you get on a date with bands that, you know, you've listened to for years and, yeah, sometimes like I don't know. Like,
yeah, we're definitely not on that level. We've played, you know, with bands a couple levels down that are still several above us, you know, like that kind of a thing.
And I mean, like even through this, I've met some people that whose music I've listened to for years, and I'm always pleasantly surprised that they're not assholes.
Yeah, it's really fear. Cool when people don't suck. It's great. Yeah. It's.
As well as like music and stuff, what about films or books or whatever? What are you watching or reading?
Oh man, dude. I mean, I wish I read more. I wish I had time. I wish I had the focus. I'm very behind. I read a lot of comic books, but I'm very behind on that kind of stuff, 'cause I've also been kind of broke, but I keep buying books with the intention to read them. And Matt from our band bought me and Nick a copy of a book that he was reading, because he was like, we're going to do this together as a band. We're going to read this book. And I was like, yes. And I'm two chapters in and it's been like 3 months. But no, I watch a lot of television. I watch a lot of movies and I'm loving it. I just saw Spider-Verse.
It's great. Right?
Loved it. It's so good. I cannot wait for the third one. I just, it just made, at the end of it, I was just like, yes, it didn't even feel like 2.5 hours. It's like, give me more of this. Give me 2.5 more
right
now.
I forgot
now.
Until the last 5 minutes of the film that it was the first part of a 2-part thing.
Yeah, it was originally supposed to be part one.
Oh, wait, hold on. Yeah, because it's been on for ages. And now how are they going to wrap this up in the last?
I felt the same way. I forgot about that. And then similarly, but differently, when I watched Fast X, and it also ends in a similar way, I was like, fuck you. I was so ready for that movie, and it was so bad.
I haven't watched a Fast film since 6 or 7. I like them. Gotcha. They're fun.
I think that 6 and 7 rule, I think that once they put the team together, the second half of 5 is sort of where it becomes good for me. I really like 8 and 9. I think they're so dumb and so awesome, and I love that the rules of gravity and physics don't apply. I think it's cool. Fast X was horse shit.
So you're not looking forward to Fast X 2 or whatever it's going to be?
Oh, no, I'm very much looking forward to it.
It's just no expectations.
exactly. Yeah, Fast no expectations. But yeah, I just finished, I watched a lot of TV. I just finished the last season of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. I like the way it ended. Just finished Ted Lasso, and yeah, I'm watching a bunch of shows. I don't know, Clone High. Do you know that
I've
show?
I've heard of it, but I've never seen it.
It's back. It was like a one season animated show on MTV in like 2002. And Chris Miller and Phil Lord, who they did the Spider-Verse movie, and they did 21 Jump Street and all, like they did it with Bill Lawrence from Scrubs and Ted
so
Lasso.
It's gonna be good then.
And
right.
Yeah, the revival season is back right now, so I've been kind of watching that. And yeah, I watch Jeopardy every day. I'm always watching TV, man.
But it's the best way to kind of lose yourself a little bit, like free the gray matter. You don't have to think too much about
Absolutely.
These things. And you never know. You get an idea sometimes, you know?
Oh, yeah, no, exactly. I watch TV like people read books. Like I'm not doing it to kind of tune out. I'm usually pretty paying attention to what I'm doing.
Cool. Well, David, thank you so much for coming on. It's been an absolute blast. I've really enjoyed talking to you, man.
Yeah, thank you for having me. This was really fun.
And when you do make arrangements to come over to the UK, I'll definitely make sure to come and see you.
Hell yeah. What part are you in?
I'm just outside of London in the southeast.
Okay,
so
awesome.
A little way from Bristol, but I could make it there fairly easily.
Well, I'm sure we'll do something in London too, so
awesome. Brilliant. Thank you so much, man. I'm gonna stop recording, but don't go anywhere just yet.
Cool.
There you go. What a fun chat, right? I hope you enjoyed listening to it as much as we did having it. We stuck around for a while afterwards chatting about various things, including how to possibly get Moonraker over to the UK, so keep your eyes out for future gigs over here, as long as I can call in a few favours. What a lovely guy David is. I hoped this would be a fun interview because their music and videos are full of humour, as well as serious issues of course, and he didn't disappoint. Again, you can find Moonraker on Instagram and Twitter at MoonrakerPunks with an X, facebook.com/Moonraker, and on Bandcamp at moonraker.bandcamp.com. as well as on all the streaming platforms and YouTube, of course. Thank you very much for listening, especially to the hardcore of you who listen all the way to the end. Please do share the show and leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. But more than anything else, look after yourselves. See you next time. Thank you for listening to this episode of Band Biographies. If you enjoyed it, please don't forget to leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or whatever service you use to listen to your podcasts. Please do reach out on Twitter at BandBiogs, Instagram at BandBiographies, search on Facebook for Band Biographies, or by emailing bandbiographies@gmail.com. See you next time.